some players might not want to go into that bubble in Orlando, and the Boston Celtics try to get back to the finals in 2010. It's a Friday Locked On Celtics. Millie, let's go. Rainy days back with the vengeance back. All the real Celtics fans in attendance. This the truth like 34. This like walking in the garden when you hear the roars. Crowd goes crazy, most in-depth coverage on the daily, mainly podcast royalty, the content kings. When you talking about the franchise with 17 rings, focus like Danny at the deadline, global with it, got a local feel like the red line, the blue line, the green line, play it in between time. I'ma throw my C's jersey on in the meantime and press play, when the F's done I can't wait until the next day, trying to stay in tune with the C's, it's the best way. Melly. John Corral is here from MassLive.com, welcoming you back for a Friday Locked On Celtics. Thanking you for making this show part of your daily routine. Slowly, basketball is coming back. We think. It's not a guarantee. We feel like it's coming back. It might come back, but we're still not 100% sure. And in the first segment today, we'll talk about some players maybe not feeling so sure about this. This show brought to you by BuiltBar.com. Go to BuiltBar.com. Use promo code LOCKEDON for $10 off your first order of the best tasting protein bar on the market. Okay, so on this Thursday, we heard that some players not so interested in maybe going into this bubble. I don't know exactly who. But according to Adrian Wojnarowski on ESPN, there were 40 to 50 players on conference calls over a 24-hour period discussing what he says are a number of concerns centered on the Orlando bubble, the restart, and it just shows that there's some uncertainty there. Now, Enes Kanter was on the NBC Sports Boston podcast with Chris Forsberg, and he said that he's heard that some pretty big names in the East were not willing to play. Now, I don't know how staunch they are in that stance, how dug in they are in that stance, but I can understand that there's some trepidation, especially as some states rush back and open things up faster than they probably should open things up. We've talked about that a little bit before. People, I think, may not feel the same sense of urgency, and they're opening themselves up to a lot of exposure. On top of that, we've had a number of demonstrations. And while I've been very staunchly pro fighting for your rights and going and protesting and looking to level the playing field on a social level, at the same time, I hope all of the people who've been out there marching and making their voices heard, go get tested. There are places in Boston. I know for a fact that Beth Israel and Brigham and Women's are setting up these mobile testing sites in hotspots. So if you're in like Jamaica Plain, Dorchester, there are places you can go and you can say, hey, I was in a protest. I need to get tested for COVID just to see if you've been exposed. Like that type of stuff is kind of potentially fueling a comeback of COVID-19. And I say comeback, it didn't really go away. America, and especially Massachusetts has done a good job of like flattening the curve, as it's been said, but it's not like the cases have gone completely away. People are still getting sick. We have to make sure that people aren't still getting sick. Now, Florida has been announcing a lot of new cases, and Orlando is in Florida, and the trepidation of players like, well, I'm going to go into COVID hotspot and risk my health when maybe I've got young kids at home, vulnerable family members. Maybe some of these players are immunocompromised somehow. I know something like Crohn's disease or even asthma can be something that, even while manageable while playing, does open you up to potential complications. And look, a lot of these guys, they're young guys, they're 23, 24, 25. They might be scared. Whoever is afraid to go in there, or at least questioning whether to go in there, they have legitimate questions. So that I understand. I'm hoping, and I've been very hopeful, and I've been expressing this optimistic tone that this can be done, and a hopeful tone that the NBA has this plan and they can take care of it. But at the same time, no one, as much as I want basketball back, I do not, and I know you do not, no one wants players to go back and really truly put themselves at risk for getting sick or worse. I don't even want to phrase it as an ultimate worst case scenario, because that's human lives that we're talking about. And we don't want to have people become carriers and go home and pass it on to somebody else. 14 of the 22 teams, according to ESPN, will be done within 53 days of the Orlando bubble. So there's going to be the initial, everybody go back, regular season, and they're inviting 22 teams. Well, we know 16 will go to the playoffs. So within a matter of a couple of weeks, 16 teams advance and 6 teams go home. And then after the first round, another 2 teams go home. So 8 teams go home after the first round. So that guys aren't going to be there as long as they think. Some guys won't be. The Celtics could be. And teams like Milwaukee, the 2 LA teams, could be there a lot longer. What are they willing to put up with? What are these players willing to put up with? What will be the punishment? Now, it says, the report says that players will not be paid. If they decide not to go, they won't be punished, but they also won't be paid, which is punishment. And I can see both sides of this. If I'm arguing on the union side, I say, well, if you're taking their money away, then you're taking a human being's choice to not enter a place where he feels like he's going to be exposed to a deadly virus. And you can't punish him for that by taking away his money. But at the other side of it, you're like, well, the whole point of this is to go back and work and get your share of the money. And if you're willing to sacrifice that share of the money, but by the way, you've already made millions, chances are. So if there's a player, a star player who is willing to forego 25% of his salary, well, the other 75% of his salary still equals millions of dollars. You say, well, I'm willing to do that. It's not really a punishment. And there's no justification for player X to be going home and still collecting full, whatever the full paycheck is for everybody, while refusing to play. So I can see both sides of that. I'm hoping that they come to some sort of agreement. And I'm hoping that it can be impressed upon these players that it will be safe. And I hope that part of that impression is, well, 100% of that impression is that it is actually safe. What I'm really curious to see is, what happens if a player says, I'm not going to play, I can't risk it, I don't feel comfortable? How do fans react? How do teammates react? How do the teams react? The NBA is taking a public stance and saying, going to punish you for this. We understand your fears and everything, and so, you know, so be it. But hey, teams have, the individuals within teams might have different private stances. So, I don't know, pick a name on the Celtics. I won't name names, but pick a player. And what if that player says, I don't feel comfortable going? How do you feel? How do you feel if that player says, I just can't, I can't put myself at risk. I don't feel comfortable going. I can't play. Does your opinion change? Is it, I mean, we're talking about, like, what if it's a popular player? What if it is? You know, let's throw some names, like, and just to see. What if Jason Tatum says, I can't do it? What if Gordon Hayward says it? What if Marcus Smart says it? What if Kemba Walker says it? Jaylen Brown, does your opinion change after everything that they've done? Does your opinion change? Does that change the opinion of players on the team? If one of those guys says, I can't do it, guys, I'm sorry, I just can't bring myself to do it, I don't feel safe. Do other guys on the team say, well, we feel safe, why don't you? Trust us, come with us, we're good. Do players, do coaches, do front office members say, geez, you know, you kind of left us out there. Which, it's hard to say. Like, again, I can see both sides of this. It's hard to say what the right answer is. We'll see what happens as things move forward. The thing about the restart is it's still so far away. Even though it's closer, this show is the June 12th show, and they're talking about playing basketball on July 30th or 31st. And so I think when it came to voting and the players and the league, the players association said, yeah, let's move forward with this. And the league moved forward with this because you have to set dates and get everything set up. There are still specifics. And so hopefully these specifics can be hammered out. And there's a good chance that some players might say, nah, I can't do this. And there's a good chance that somebody might get sick. I don't know what the actual odds are. Again, I'm a more positive person, a more optimistic person. I don't think that once you put everybody into this bubble, quote unquote bubble, if you've tested everybody and they're in this bubble and you're doing things to stay safe, masks and social distancing and all of that stuff, and you're doing temperature checks and different testing all the time, I feel like it's possible to be safer in this bubble than you would be in normal life. How safe is that? I don't know. I can't put a percentage on that. I'm not one of the people who says that this is taking a huge risk. I'm just not. I think this can be done. But I also acknowledge that I'm saying that on a certain amount of faith that certain things are going to happen. And hopefully those things happen. So we'll see. Hopefully this gets resolved. And hopefully, most importantly, everybody stays safe. When we come back, Chuck, Mike, and I get into the 2009-2010 season. Part one of the 2009-2010 season. And some of the interesting names that come in, some of the interesting scenarios that we see, and the Celtics' surprising run towards a NBA Finals appearance and one of the more fun moments of that season.
You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Boston Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
There are a ton of protein bars on the market, but the one I reach for is Built Bar. If you go to builtbar.com, you can check out the nutrition label. Built Bar gives you all the protein that you want, 15 to 20 grams of protein or so, without a ton of calories in that bar, usually less than 200, 200 at the max. No added sugars, no added carbs, very low on both counts. Check out the labels, compare those labels to other brands. And here's a cool thing that Built Bar is doing. They're actually changing their formula. So I love the Built Bars that I'm getting now. They've got about 8 million bars of this current formula that they're selling for up to 50% off. One box, 15% off, up to four boxes or more, half price, and 100% of those profits will be donated to organizations that support education, poverty, equality, and ending hate and racism. So, on one hand, you get the best tasting protein bar on the market. On the other hand, you get to buy a bunch and save a ton. If you're a repeat customer, this is a great way to stock up. And then you're supporting a good cause. So go to BuiltBar.com, use promo code LOCKEDON to get $10 off your first order.
After a year where the Celtics lost Kevin Garnett, they get back to things. Kevin Garnett's back. He is as healthy as he can be, although not what he used to be. So the Boston Celtics embarked in the 2009-2010 season. And amongst the additions, Rasheed Wallace, Marquise Daniels. Rasheed, first of all, just wild that Rasheed Wallace was a Celtic. That's something that even as time has gone on, and I know that it happened, it's still that year is kind of like he was a Celtic. Like that was a thing that happened.
It was unexpected. He's not the kind of player that you think about automatically when you think Celtics basketball in historical way. But he's buddies with KG, right?
Oh. So. Very, very close friends with KG.
Yeah.
And I think this was a move, like, we can tell. When you look at Danny Ainge's history of, like, constantly trying to make the team better, but when this team has an opportunity, like, this is the window is still open. It's maybe not quite as open as it felt maybe the past couple of years. We're coming into this not feeling entirely comfortable with how Kevin Garnett's going to look. I mean, obviously, we're all the big question mark coming into this is what's KG going to look like? And so Danny Ainge is still trying to put pieces around him that try to enhance everybody and push these guys to a potential championship. This is the championship window is still open regardless. So getting Rasheed Wallace is a veteran guy, obviously, like you said, friends with KG, knows the league. He's a champion too. If anybody can understand what it takes to win, it's him. And he fits kind of like Doc Rivers' style of player, like a veteran guy that is, as much as he has like the technical fouls and all that stuff, I don't think he's ever had a problem in the locker room. Guys tend to like Rasheed Wallace. So that was a signing that, even though on the surface you're like, oh, wow, Rasheed. Yeah, okay, I can see it. And he came out right away and said in October of 2009, quote, I think we can get that Bulls record. He was saying that Celtics could win 72 games that season. Spoiler alert, they did not win 72 games this season.
I mean, I remember there being a lot of optimism around his arrival. I don't know if I can't dig up what type of contract they gave him. Was it some sort of like was it a mid-level situation, 3 years or something maybe? I can't recall. But I remember feeling optimistic, I think I don't know. I feel like we're kind of underselling it. I mean, I thought it was a really good move at the time. Clearly someone who was a veteran who had, somewhat of a championship background, former sort of, Celtics opponent. So, she was your classic, you'd hate him if he was, you're playing against him. He was so vocal and everything. And I was excited to have him here. And for the most part, we don't want to fast forward through the season, but it was fun having him here. I don't recall him having too many moments where he completely lost his mind. But I was excited, bringing him on board. I thought was a solid move. There may be a blog post out there where I differ with myself, but that's how I recall it.
Yeah.
I got to just add, and, as a bonus to Rasheed coming to Boston, we got the phrase "ball don't lie." Everybody's up with that now.
Yeah, that's a good point. We definitely got the strong "ball don't lie" energy out of Rasheed yes. Wallace that year. So to answer your question, Chuck, he signed a 2-year deal worth just about a little more than $12 million. There was a player option for a third year at 6.3
6.8 million, but he only played one season and then retired. So,
yeah.
But they paid him just under $6 million for that year. I'd love to go back and look at some of our past blog posts. I tried to go back and look at some of the 2010 blog posts. Unfortunately, there have been some technical mishaps along the way, and I can't find those. So,
unfortunately,
you know, so I'm sure a lot of things that we have said along the way may contradict some of the things we're going to say right here, but this was like at that point, Sheed was still when I look at the story of him signing, he was still quote unquote coveted. Like that, it wasn't like he sucked. He still had, you know, a little bit left in the tank. His year prior to that, he played 66 games in Detroit and averaged 12 points and 7.5 rebounds. And he was hitting, 35.5% from three. So he was a guy that you would say he could have helped at that point. Now, the numbers didn't carry over, and he obviously wasn't a starter, so it was a little bit different for him. And I think he was just very much in cruise mode through most of the season. It's not like he didn't have good stretches. He came right out of the gate and had some pretty decent games. And the fifth game of the season, he had 20.6 rebound, 2 assist game, and he hit 6 of 8 from three. So you had like this feeling of like, whoa, this is going pretty well. And the Celtics came out of the gate, I think, winning six straight games. So there was a good feeling like, all right, this might work. He, you know, KG can take his time. He can recover. We can lean on Sheed a little bit. And when KG is feeling all right, he still doesn't have to play a lot of minutes. So the Sheed signing is as kind of weird as it felt to have him on the team. It still made sense. And there were some good early returns.
He played well, as you said, early on. One of the problems that he ran into, though, was maybe that 6 of 8 shooting from three in that early game was a little bit of fool's gold, because for the season he ended up shooting only 28% from the arc. And if anything, he just probably took too many three-pointers. And maybe our expectations, which we possibly didn't have high expectations early on. Then suddenly we did have expectations after he did well for, you know, starting out. And after that, though, he might have tailed off a little bit, just as the whole team did.
Follow us on our social channels at LO Celtics on Twitter and at Locked On Celtics on Instagram. Yeah, I mean, that's a team that started out 23-5, and there were good feelings around that team, even as I'm pretty sure that Kevin Garnett had a slow start to that season, but he was still an all-star in the 09-10 season and the season after that, as a matter of fact. But he clearly wasn't exactly himself, and he had a couple of games there early on where it was like, well, maybe he's going to struggle. But then he had some big games. Like he had a 26.8 rebound game in the seventh game of the season. So he showed like these flashes of like big games and a little step back, big games and a little step back. And frankly, I think that kind of characterizes the season for the Boston Celtics, that they started out, like I said, 23-5, and then they played 500 basketball the rest of the way. So it was almost like this was kind of like the season when I mentioned in the last podcast where we talked about the 08-09 season, where I was like, well, maybe these guys will just kind of coast a little bit. They've won their championship. They didn't have that long of an offseason. Maybe they coast a little bit, and they didn't. But this season, they came out to the big start, and then they were like, all right, we've made our point, and we're just gonna chill. And that was like a microcosm of the season too, like as far as individual games, because they would have big leads all throughout this season and then constantly be blowing big leads.
Yeah, this team, I mean, they infuriated me at the second half of the season. This was, I think, when we first started to talk about flip the switch.
Yes.
Right? Because we had optimism going in. Like you said, they showed off early that they could be a force. We liked the pieces that they added. You know, I think just to go back a bit, I think we also thought Marquis Daniels could give a little bit of a, you know, be, you know, contribute off the bench a bit, whether it's, you know, 8 to 10 points or something like that. So it seemed like the pieces were there, right? And they started to show it. But then for whatever reason, there's this regression. And I think we just started to view this team as that they were coasting, that they were just trying to get by, get healthy or whatever, be ready for the playoffs. And it was maddening to watch. I mean, I think you saw how, you know, dominant they were the year they won the championship. And then, the following year it was the KG injury, but I don't know. For me, it was like, I wanted to see them sort of reassert themselves as the top team in the East. And they clearly didn't do that. At least with the regular season play. And I remember being pissed off about it. I just didn't have confidence that was something that could be done. It was frustrating to watch them lose those games in that way. So I was pretty pissed off about it. Not the most optimistic Celtics fan going into the playoffs,
which is just comes as a total shock to me.
There was another element to this too. You haven't mentioned Big Baby, Glenn Davis. He started out the season on the injured list. This is the year that he got in a stupid fight with a friend of his before the season,
right,
before training camp. He broke his right thumb, and he missed the first 2 months. He was out the first 27 games of the season he missed. And ironically, he came back on Christmas Day, where they won in Orlando. That was the site of his game-winning playoff jump shot at the buzzer.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a real good playoff season the year before. And then when they needed him to probably help KG readjust as he came back from his injury, Big Baby wasn't there. You know, and KG was clearly had lost a step because of his injury. He wasn't the same. He wasn't really KG at the early part of this year. Somehow, though, it was ironic. Somehow the Celtics had their best part of this season when Big Baby was out. And, you know, they, as you said, John, they won 23 of their first 28 games. Then after Big Baby came back, they were only a 500 team. It was just a weird, the whole way that the whole season developed, it was just weird.
Yeah, there. I mean, this was not only did he miss five, six weeks. They suspended him. I'm reading through the quotes now. A real tough quote from Wick Grosbeck, who said, "We'll deal with him. I'm not going to call him Big Baby anymore. He's Glenn. He needs to act like Glenn. We'll decide what to do once I talk to him. Once we talk to him today." And I think when you look at the progression of Davis's career, that's kind of like a running theme. Like you could probably still say that he needs to act a little bit more like Glenn, as opposed to Big Baby or whatever. Like he recently had the legal issues with the drug. Well, I don't even know what came of that. And I don't even particularly care because I didn't think it was that big of a deal, but like, to put out a video of himself eating like boxes of chicken on a private plane surrounded by stacks of money. You're like, really? That's how you're going to respond with this. Like it was a little bit of a running theme of a lack of maturity with him. And I'd forgotten about that he had, but I remember at the time we're just like, what the hell? Because he had that big moment the year before, and We saw him as a guy that, hey, you know, he despite everything, he could help.
Yeah, he was expected to play a big role, especially coming off the postseason. And it was disappointing that he did what he did. You know, if he had gotten hurt on the court, that's one thing, but this was completely unnecessary.
So as the season goes on, they did not get a ton from Marquise Daniels, although he, you know, he was okay, but it was, you know, you look at the contributions from everybody. It really was, it was Pierce, Ray, Garnett, Rondo. This is Rondo's first All-Star season, but also I feel like this is also the beginning of when some people started to turn on Rondo. I feel like that was happening this season because this was the year that, because they were coasting, there was a feeling like Rondo was kind of like rolling along and coasting with them too. And he was starting to get maybe a little lazy on defense and gambling a lot more than he did before. And he was kind of going for the stats. And this is when people started to accuse him of like really hunting for assists rather than just running the offense and getting assists within the flow of the offense. I remember having these arguments a lot, where you'd say, well, he's getting the assists, he's setting guys up. What's the point of a point guard? To get guys the assists so they can go score. And he's doing that. But at the same time, the other side was saying, well, there are times when he can pass and he's not. He's waiting until something else opens up so he's the one that can get the assist and not somebody else, rather than like breaking down a defense. So I feel like this was the season where that noise really started to pick up steam.
Yeah, it could be. I mean, I definitely remember that being part of him. I also remember his free throw shooting, not seeing improvements in his free throw shooting. You know, it's funny, after a few years, you know, then you start to nitpick players, right?
Right.
Rondo's greatest playoff performances came, you know, a few years after the season. But, yeah, I mean, I think that's the nature of Boston, right? I mean, we love to nitpick our nitpick our athletes. And that's partially true. But going back to what you were saying with the bench contributions, yeah, you know, Daniels was pretty much flat, and they had, you know, the issues with Davis. So this, at the trade deadline, Ainge flips, you know, he makes the move for Nate Robinson, and he moves out Eddie House. So clearly they weren't super happy with, you know, the bench production there. Because when you look at the numbers for Eddie and Nate Robinson's numbers, I don't think there was much difference there. I just remember Nate as being a little bit of a disappointment here in Boston. I mean, he had a couple of moments. I think maybe his most famous moment is when he tried to jump on Paul Pierce's back after that game winner against the Knicks and missed.
Which is,
you can't
bring that up without us pausing for just a second. And just how that might be one of the funniest things I've ever seen on a basketball court. In slow motion, Paul Pierce running with his hands out. He's making that face like, you know, I just beat you guys. Nate tries to jump on him once, then jumps clear over him and like flips. And watch the slow motion clip, because the absolute best part is Ray Allen in the background, who's like giving him this look like, what the hell are you doing? That's just hilarious. If I'm not mistaken, at some point in that clip, you see Kevin Garnett standing at midcourt doing his little bow as well, which the whole scene, chef's kiss.
The Celtics and Paul Pierce did love to torment the Knicks, that's for sure. Mm-mm. And Nate enjoyed it himself because he was a former Knick. You know, you could say the same thing about him that you said about Rashid earlier. It's not the kind of guy that you usually think about being a Celtic. And here he was. And, as to your point, Chuck, you know, in the playoffs, Nate did have, his moments, including, ironically, the both, he and Big Baby had that one game. Donkey and Shrek.
Yeah.
We'll get to that in a little bit. That came much later, but you know, they did turn in some good performances. The bench as a whole performed a lot better in the playoffs than they did in the regular season.
Well, the team as a whole did that.
Yeah.
And so along the way,
people might, I don't know if people remember this. This is one of those things you might forget. Michael Finley joins the Boston Celtics as well. This is like a weird kind of collection of names, which the Celtics have never really been the let's just pursue these names. These are just happen to be names that were available. But again, Sheed, Nate Robinson, Michael Finley, who had had a long, very good career on his own and was trying to get like trying to fill like that three-point shooter role off the bench, which, you know, he had a few shots. If I recall correctly, he had a couple of moments, but nothing of real consequence for the Celtics. Let's see. He had one 15-point game. He had a 14-point game towards the end of the season and had a few games where he had a stretch there where he hit, two and four three-pointers like in back-to-back games. So he was out there kind of like hitting some shots, but by the end, by the time they rolled through the rest of the playoffs, like he started to see less and less time. Next week, we continue with our 2009-2010 season, the NBA Finals, and then we rock on after that. Oh boy, so much, so much. The Kendrick Perkins trade, Rajon Rondo, playoff Rondo getting hurt, Dwayne Wade nearly breaking his arm. A lot coming up in our deep dive as it continues. And soon we'll get to the Paul Pierce, Kevin Garnett trade. We're working our way up to basically prior to this season. So a lot to get to. Subscribe if you haven't. Follow on Spotify. Give us a good rating. Give us a good written review. It's a great way to help this show without spending any money. I'm not asking you for any money. I'm asking you to go to BuiltBar.com. If you want to buy Built Bars and get the best tasting protein bar on the market, use the promo code LOCKEDON to get $10 off your first order. But if you don't want to spend money, I'm not asking you to subscribe or anything like that. Just go give a good written review and a 5-star rating. I hope you've enjoyed the show enough to do that. Back next week, full week of Locked On Celtics podcast. So go ahead and subscribe. And thank you for listening to the Locked On Celtics podcast. We're part of the Locked On Podcast Network.